persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
Devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Stand by.
The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse in your Brain Bazaar. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
The questionable conservative credentials of Trump, Carson, and Carly, and what's the Cruz strategy? It seems to be cruising back there in the background. With McCarthy out of the race for House Speaker, do genuine conservatives have a chance to lead? And now, an Arizona college campus is traumatized by a shooter killing one and wounding three. It is sad in 100 different ways. I mean, I'm sure you feel the same way. These days, it's impossible to simply mourn the dreadful and senseless loss of life perpetrated by these kids with distorted hearts. Over the loss of life, the pain that floods a community ravaged by events like these, you know, without having to deal with a president who's going to run out there and politicize the matter, instead of just, you know, joining the grieving parents, friends, neighbors, to console and to sort out what has happened here, we immediately get attacked by the political left with their agenda to attack our Second Amendment rights. And it's really unseemly and inappropriate. These nightmarish events ought not to be turned into political argument about guns. But the left, you know, insists on turning each of these events into an argument about guns. And it's, as Russia has often said, the aggressor defines the terms of engagement. So we have no choice but to respond to this. We cannot ignore it. But as I have done, and I'm sure you have as well, certainly, we must pause and pray and mourn with these families, along with those families and friends of the nine who were killed last week in Oregon. I offer our condolences to the parents and friends of Colin Brow, who was killed in this shooting by 18-year-old Stephen Jones at Northern Arizona University, and to Nicholas Prato, Kyle Zintex, and Nicholas Peering, who were wounded. Our prayers are with you and with your family, with your friends, and with your community. Now, I know the president-elect has said, you know, prayers are not enough. Man speaks so foolishly. Everyone knows that no prayer that is not followed up with action is ever enough. No one offering prayers and condolences ever thought otherwise. What a stupid thing to say. But apparently, the president-elect knows as much about these things as he does the number of states in the Union. 57 during his first campaign, or his knowledge of the Declaration of Independence, which he quotes wrong consistently, or of the Constitution that he swore to uphold, but doesn't. And in his ignorance, this foolish man denigrates and undermines the sincere sympathy he's expressed from honest hearts in a gesture that has far greater meaning than such a man can ever or could ever know. The profound, sustaining grace that is ministered to a heart by the prayers of God's people on behalf of those suffering a loss, the God has himself suffered, is beyond the understanding of a fella devoid of anything like heavenly spiritual sensibilities. I mean, as opposed to that species of spirituality that emanates from the prince and power of the air that operates upon in and through the children of disobedience, only a devil would denigrate the value of the prayers of God's people on the behalf of those who are suffering. I notice a lot of Twitter chatter on the left is about how it's time to get serious about our lax gun laws in the United States. Oh, boy. Okay. Gather the children around, and let's try to explain this to them. First of all, the Arizona campus shooting is not of the same genre as the recent Oregon shooting, or it certainly doesn't appear to be. I understand an altercation took place between two groups on this campus following a party, and for reasons we don't yet know, it got physical, and this 18-year-old took a handgun and shot four students, leaving one dead and three wounded. So the first point to be made here is that this is not a reprise of Umpqua University in Oregon. So far, at least, it is not alleged that this was a mass murdering rampage of a suicidal maniac. This shooting seems to be more like the killing of 15-year-old Davion Funche on a sidewalk in a liberal haven of gun restriction laws, Chicago, only yesterday. Or the killing of any one of the 62 homicides that have occurred in Detroit this year so far, a city with some of the most restrictive gun laws on the books, and coincidentally, with the highest homicide rate in the nation. 54.6 per 100,000 residents, second only to the country that holds the record for homicides in the world, Honduras, which boasts 90 per 100,000 residents. In other words, if Detroit were a country, it would have the second highest homicide rate in the world. And then second, some might argue that this kid, described as a gun enthusiast, might not have had a gun if Arizona law did not allow 18-year-olds to own one. And maybe he would not have carried it into this fight if Arizona did not have open carry laws. We don't know the details yet. It's possible, I suppose, that Stephen Jones, 18, is a law-abiding citizen. Well, not anymore, of course, but maybe he was, and simply went crazy. And on an impulse, ran to his car, grabbed his gun, ran back to the group, and started shooting. But according to the police, that's not how it went down. And again, this is one of those unfolding stories, and details tend to surface slowly in these cases. But from what the police are reporting so far, this kid appears to have come prepared to use his gun. Furthermore, it appears he carried his gun concealed. And concealed carry is against Arizona state law without a permit, and you have to be at least 21 to get a concealed carry permit in Arizona. And so the point is that the kid was in violation of Arizona state gun laws going into this conflict. Or in other words, we have another case where gun laws were being violated. What did make a difference in this situation is this. A group of brave kids, I understand, jumped Stephen and stopped further bloodshed. I received an email from a friend last week in response to the Umpqua shooting. I didn't use it, and there's a reason for that. The subject read, "On terrible and senseless tragedies such as Roseburg, Oregon, my opinion." And it's very simple. It shows a graphic comparison of Honduras and Switzerland. Now, this has gone viral. I thought I'd use this as an opportunity to encourage you to research these things before you run with them right into a wall and hurt rather than help our worthy cause. The viral email shows, on one side, Honduras, population 8.2 million, on the other side, Switzerland, population 8.2 million, Honduras, bans citizens from owning guns, and then on the other side, Switzerland, requires citizens to own guns. On the left, Honduras, homicide rate, highest in the world. And then on the right, Switzerland, homicide rate, lowest in the world. End of discussion, right? Well, there are many problems with this, beginning with the fact that Honduras actually does not ban ownership of weapons. In fact, a cursory overview of Honduras gun laws left me with the impression that, at least according to the laws, they really aren't too much different from our own, with some greater and some lesser restrictions than, say, California. Now, as that compares with Switzerland, it's not hard to forgive someone for suggesting Honduras virtually bans guns by comparison, but when you consider that there are only 6.2 guns per 100 people in Honduras, as opposed to 45.7 guns for every 100 people in Switzerland. Obviously, in spite of their laws, it's obviously harder to get a gun than a study of their laws seems to suggest. The next problem is that Switzerland does not have the lowest homicide rate in the world, although it is certainly among those countries at the bottom of the list. Switzerland has a homicide rate of 0.6 per 100,000. But Japan, Singapore, Iceland, and Luxembourg all have lower rates. Furthermore, Switzerland certainly has a very high per capita ownership of firearms, ranking fourth with 45.7 guns per 100 residents, but America is actually number one in that regard, with 90 guns per 100 residents. So with 45.7 guns per 100 residents, obviously not everyone in Switzerland is required to own a gun, and according to the laws, they're not. Remember, by the way, these numbers are not per household, they are per resident, and the number of Swiss families that keep firearms in their homes probably is higher than that of America, but we have no way of knowing that for sure. In any case, the gun laws in place in Honduras are certainly more restrictive than those in Switzerland. I mean, as I said, the number of persons owning firearms in Switzerland ranked fourth with 45.7 per 100 residents is significantly greater than that of Honduras, ranked 87th, with only 6.2 guns per 100 residents. So one would naturally expect the homicide rate in Switzerland to be significantly lower than it is in Honduras, and that is the way it turns out. Although I think it more likely that the differences between Honduras and Switzerland that account for the dramatic disparity in homicide rate probably has more to do with the culture of corruption that prevails in Honduras right now, as opposed to the relative stability of law and order that prevails in Switzerland. And what is interesting to me in that regard is how hard it seems certain people are working to break down law and order in this country, and the interesting relationship there seems to be between the undermining of law and order in this country by the current administration, with his influence over the DOJ that's undermining law and order, and the recent Supreme Court rulings that likewise are undermining law and order, and the dramatic uptick in mass shootings and homicide generally in those cities, particularly that are operated or ruled or governed by socialist sympathizing Democrats. Okay, yes, I'll provide evidence supporting my statement. I'm going to need to begin winding up the first segment. Let's do it this way. I am a member of FrontSight. I'll tell you more about that in a little bit. And I received an email recently with a link to a presentation put together by Bill Whittle. And you can Google number one with a bullet. And you need to go online and look at this. Now, here's someone who did his homework, and he avoided making the sorts of careless errors represented in that viral email I mentioned earlier. So I'm going to summarize Bill Whittle's presentation. First, the USA is indeed number one in gun ownership per capita, over 90 guns per 100 people in America. Second to us is Serbia with 58.2 per 100, and Yemen, third place with 54 per 100, and then Switzerland, fourth place with 45.7 per 100. So the USA has almost twice as many guns per capita as the second highest in the world. Now, Honduras is ranked 87th with only 6.1 guns per 100 residents. Now, according to Obama et al., America should have the highest homicide rate in the world, right? But the fact is, Honduras has the highest homicide rate in the world with 90 homicides per 100,000 citizens. Venezuela is next, and then the Virgin Islands. And as Whittle points out, America doesn't even make the top five, nor does it make the top 10. It doesn't even show up in the top 50 or even the top 100. In fact, America comes in at 111th with a 4.7 homicides per 100,000 rating, and that includes all of the mass shootings that we're dealing with right now or that have gone on in the past. It also includes the out-of-control homicide rates in uber-liberal gun control enclaves such as Detroit, which, as we mentioned, has 54.6 per 100,000. New Orleans follows at 53.2, St. Louis 35.5, Baltimore 34.9, Newark 34.4, Oakland 31.8, Stockton 23.7, Kansas City 22.6, Philadelphia 21.5, Cleveland 21.3, Memphis 20.2, Atlanta 19, and Chicago 18.5. You have to understand, all of these are included in that 4.7 average for the entire nation. That means there are a lot of cities that are very, very close to zero, whereas, for example, Plano, Texas, arguably the gun nut capital of the world, at least certainly in America, where, I mean, everyone has a personal arsenal of weapons. And the homicide rate in Plano, Texas is 0.4 per 100,000 residents. In fact, in every city where sensible leadership recognizes the value of the Second Amendment, the homicide rate is kept very low. Will there be anomalies? Of course. I mean, as Piazza of FrontSight aptly points out, 395 men, women, and children were killed over Labor Day weekend in auto accidents, my friends. But no one's calling for cars to be banned, and no one is doing that because that would be foolish. The cars are not killing people. A significant number of the auto deaths are alcohol-related, by the way. Others are reckless or from reckless driving, including distracted driving, and some of it's nothing else but an unfortunate accident. And these sorts of things occur with guns also, but far fewer people die from accidental discharge of firearms than do from accidents on our highways. I mean, I think it's 32,000 lives are taken every year in auto accidents. But anyway, guns save lives every day. One study says that as many as 2 million Americans defend their lives with a gun every year. Now, another guy who never saw a gun he liked has attempted to argue that this number is inflated. He says it's more like 100,000 Americans defend their lives with a gun every year. 100,000, folks. Now, others have said, well, it's more like somewhere between 250,000 and 370,000 every year. Fine, take the lowest of these numbers. 100,000 lives protected by private citizens every year because they had a gun available to them. So what is causing these school shootings? No time to go into it here, but listen, there is a very good case being made right now alleging that psychoactive drugs that are used to control the behavior of children diagnosed with various issues and so on is where this is coming from. Now, you would be shocked to learn how many of these kids involved in these things were on prescription psych drugs. Listen, 35 school shooters, school-related violence incidents were perpetrated by kids under the influence of prescribed psychotropic drugs. A little project, MK Ultra going down. Now, some of you don't know what that's about, and I don't have time to go into it, but it was a government program where they were using drugs to manipulate behavior. I wonder if Stephen was on psych drugs. I've got to go to a break right now. I'll be right back.
Why do we have health insurance when we're not sick? Because of the very real possibility that we'll need it. What about food insurance or electricity or clean water insurance? In other words, the things we take for granted every day might not be available in the case of an emergency. So what am I supposed to do, you ask? Well, just like everything else, you need to get informed. Which brings us to the Santa Maria Area Emergency Preparedness Survival Expo 15. Come October 17th, a group of folks with skills in this very thing will be demonstrating ways to insure against these potential shortages. October 17th, 9 a.m. at the Lighthouse. Register by midnight Friday, October 2nd, online at santamarialighthouse.org. Pass your mouse over the resource button and select Survival Expo 15 and complete the form. Survival Expo 15. Be prepared.
Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedarabia Road, Santa Maria.
Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your Brain Masseur, and Paul Revere's Lantern Lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. I hear you, and okay, I will do some more research on the role of psychotropic drugs in these mass killings in our schools by these troubled kids, but the Brain Masseur always runs this sort of thing down to ground before he goes with it, and while I felt I'd seen enough to warrant raising the question, I do need more time with it before I can lay out a full case supporting the allegation. Okay, let's see. How about a quick update on the criminal investigation into the allegations that Planned Parenthood has been engaged in the sale of baby body parts? I see. There is no investigation. But at least we've got a decent group there in Congress looking into this. Obama's Department of Justice won't do anything about it. No investigation called for by the Obama administration, by the way. And the MSM is virtually silent on the matter. They don't care. Doesn't further their agenda, you see. So we have to leave it to the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee to look into this. I'm glad for these Republicans that care about these things. Now, here's what they've come up with so far. First, Planned Parenthood certainly does not need federal subsidies. It is self-sustaining, with a revenue of $1.3 billion in their latest report, I understand. No word on how much of that represents the sale of baby body parts, by the way. Planned Parenthood enjoyed a whopping $127 million in net income. Now, that's after expenses, you see. Pretty healthy. And reported holding almost $1.5 billion in assets. And as for salaries, well, baby parts seller and president of Planned Parenthood, Cecil Richards, has been paid $2.47 million from 09 to 13. She was paid $590,928 in 2013 alone. And then, quote, a significant number of Planned Parenthood executives earn in excess of $200,000 annually, end quote. Oh, and this will annoy your progressive friends, but let them know it anyway. The committee has learned that Planned Parenthood's claim that abortion accounts for only 3% of their business, health services, is false. In fact, Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion provider in the United States, performing 327,000 baby murders per year. While over the last decade, cancer screenings at Planned Parenthood are declining, while abortions are increasing. Oh, and of the $1.3 billion in total reported revenue as of end of fiscal year June 30, 2014, $528.4 million of it, or roughly 41% of that revenue, is coming out of your pockets, Mr. Taxpayer. All right, let's take a look at the race for Speaker of the House. McCarthy has withdrawn his bid for the Speaker's gavel. What prompted this? Well, a group of conservative House representatives have teamed up to declare they do not support McCarthy for Speaker. That's called the Freedom Caucus, I believe. 40 of them band together and pledged their support for Daniel Webster. Remember him? He's the guy who got on Boehner's bad side a while back by opposing him, and so Boehner took away his appointment to the Rules Committee. Nice guy. Some poetic justice here, perhaps, if Webster does become Speaker. And he's a true credentialed conservative, too. So watch for the aristos to maneuver quickly to marginalize him and worm someone in a little more pliable. Like Paul Ryan, for example. Now, Paul Ryan has the dubious honor of being liked by Boehner and McCarthy for the job. And he's been known to cave on principle when in order to stand or take a stand would have made him the, quote, skunk at the party, end quote. Overall, the only thing that makes Ryan more appealing than Boehner or McCarthy is that he is probably the most conservative of the insiders available. But what makes many of us uncomfortable with Ryan is that he is, after all, one of the conservative members most comfortable with compromise. All right? That makes the left more comfortable with him, but suggests to us that with Ryan, we're not going to be much better off than we were with Boehner. Now, I think Ryan is Boehner's hope to say, see, I told you so, because Ryan, like Boehner, is inclined to be pragmatic rather than dig his heels in and call Obama's bluff. Brinksmanship is not Ryan's forte, and I'm afraid that's what we need during these last months in dealing with Obama. Someone has got to put the brakes on this Iran deal, refuse any increase in spending. Now, Ryan has been good on the budget in the past, but we also need someone to hold the line against illegal immigration, and Ryan is a path to citizenship kind of guy. And while I can stomach his position on free trade, and I have sympathy with most of his views on foreign affairs and national security, and, you know, an endorsement from National Review is not lost on me, okay? Nevertheless, he has the smell of establishment. So if he does get the gavel, conservatives will need to make certain they hold him accountable to conservative principles and be very loud in their support of him and reproach of him if he strays. But certainly they need to really rally to him and support him if he does take a stand. Because, you see, Ryan's the kind of guy, if he gets the whiff of a lack of support or faltering support, he'll wobble. And folks, we don't need another wobbling gavel holder, now do we? One thing is certain, however, the progs are scared. I mean, they're going crazy with worry that the Republicans are being taken over by genuine conservatives. End Citizens United. That's a group trying to destroy a very effective conservative group called Citizens United, has put out an email, a fundraising email, with this title, quote, breaking. Kevin McCarthy withdraws his bid for Speaker of the House. Far right-wing Speaker now seems likely, end quote. That tells you everything you needed to know about why it's a good thing that Boehner's out and that McCarthy has followed him. The Lib email goes on to say, quote, it's shocking. Republicans are in total chaos, end quote. There's no question the Republicans are divided, and they have been for a while, between Democrat light and genuine rock-solid conservatism. Truth is, that's been a problem for quite a long time, but it has finally come to a head, and that boil's about to burst. That's kind of gross. Anyway, I gotta begin the wind-up. Cruz seems to be cruising along quietly in the background. I heard somewhere that his strategy is to lay low, but not too low, not dropping out of sight. But he's trying to run while hiding from the establishment, quote, unquote. He said something to that effect. Letting Trump and Carson and Carly and others beat each other up real good and then make his surge for the finish line later in the race. Now, folks, I ran cross country in high school. I understand that you don't want to get tricked into chasing the rabbit, you know. You've got to pace yourself for the long race and not use up your strength too early. Trump has a distinct advantage in being financially able to fund his entire campaign. Of course, that also has some troubling aspects to it, if you ask me. Cruz has to depend on a whole lot of $50 and $100 donations, although we did get some help earlier from the Koch brothers, and God bless them. But there is no question at all that Cruz is the only principled, credentialed, and consistent conservative in this race right now. And look, I'm telling you, put him against Rubio or any of them, and he really is. Now, don't throw Carly at me. And Trump, please. When are you Trumpster divers, pun intended, going to smell the dumpster all over the Trumpster? Okay. But really, he is pro-life, except in cases of rape or incest, you know, he and Carly. So what, let's execute the innocent baby for the crime of its criminal sperm donor? No, execute the rapist, save the baby. But the point is, Carly and Trump both simply don't get it when it comes to right to life from conception, and that tells you there is a gaping hole in their principles. Their thinking's skewed here, that they are able to sacrifice the life of an innocent baby on the altar of their sentimentalism, and more disturbingly, probably on the altar of really just a little political correctness there. As for Carson, I love the guy. Whoever becomes president would be well served to recruit him and make him part of their team. But he needs some time for his conservative roots to develop. And I don't think we need to put that plant behind the Oval Office just yet. In front of it, perhaps, but he needs some time to prove out his conservative credentials and to develop his roots till they are firmly established in conservative soil before he moves behind that desk. He's still a relatively recent transplant to conservative soil, okay? Likewise, Trump, by the way. Quote, rival campaigns are complaining publicly and privately that the two frontrunners are, at best, new to the issues party activists care most about. And their activist supporters are starting to needle Trump and Carson on questions of orthodoxy to GOP principles, end quote. For example, friends, Trump is all good with eminent domain. Yeah, he's all good with the government coming in and taking private property to, as he put it, quote, build a factory that's going to have 5,000 jobs, end quote. What? What? Are you kidding me? This is what I've been trying to tell you. He does not get it. Here's what he said in full, quote, having the government take one person's property for another's gain is not a conservative principle. If you're going to build a factory that's going to have 5,000 jobs, that's entirely different, end quote. That's what Trump said. Now, this is unbelievable to me. What is this guy think? Is he a socialist? Build a factory for whom, pray tell? For Boeing? For Procter & Gamble? Are you out of your ever-loving mind to be supporting this guy? He doesn't get it. He does not know what he's saying. I'm sure he doesn't. What? He's going to, what? He's going to use eminent domain then to take property, private property, to build what? A Trump Tower? Because it'll employ a lot of people? Ah, so he does not have a tower that would employ, say, 5,000? And that's the point? You don't see what I'm saying? God help us if our conservative base has become so dull, they don't hear the socialism in this man's thinking. In an article from Breitbart, quote, Kyle Cheney and Katie Gluck of, I don't know how to pronounce it, Gluck or whatever, of Political Report, there are signs conservatives are starting to take notice of Trump's and Carson's prior leanings. And in the, and then he quotes, rival campaigns are complaining publicly and privately that the two frontrunners are, at best, new to the issues party activists care most about. Breitbart reports that, quote, the article details how both are less than solid in their pro-life credentials. Hello? As an example, Carson's new book argues that each state should decide the matter. And everyone knows Trump has only been a recent convert to the pro-life cause. And the Breitbart article goes on, quote, Cheney and Gluck also touch on Carson's old gun control statements and his non-interventionist foreign policy views, as well as Trump's spotted history on universal health care and previous stances on immigration that don't look anything like what he's talking about today, end quote. You see, my friends, it's like our Lord taught us, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. Listen to what, don't make the same mistake we made with Obama. Listen to what these men are saying. All right, I've got to go. Last week, I had to interrupt my series, Taking America Back, to address the very important matter of assurance. For example, let me ask you, if you died today, would you go to heaven? If you answer that with anything except an absolute assurance that you would, then something is wrong. Why? Because the Bible says, these things have I written unto you that believe on the name of the Son of God, that ye may know that ye have eternal life. So you can know you have it. Well, anyway, I explain how you can know that you have eternal life in that message, and it's posted online at santamarialighthouse.org, and then go to the menu bar there and choose About Us, and then from the drop-down, select Salvation, that I go into in great detail. This Sunday night, we're going to return to the series. At 6 p.m., I'm going to prove that God does preside over the nations of the world, that he does raise up those nations that acknowledge Christ, that he currently has a nation under God, and that it is America, and that therefore we have a prior claim to this land that as kings and priests unto God, we need to assert. So don't miss this Sunday night. It's going to be an eye-opener. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know that you see they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000 and say lights on if you see that they are on, and we'll ride like we're here and spread the warning to others. Or say lights off if you disagree with me. Leave a message. I've given you a piece of my mind to chew on, or you can throw down a piece of yours for me to chew on. So call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. And leave a message for me in our listener response hotline, a free call to anyone within the continental United States. From outside the country, or for those who prefer it, you can email me by going to our website at thebrainmassageshow.com, at www.thebrainmassageshow.com. Now, folks, I'd like you to join us for our Survival Expo 15. Go to the website, go to resources, drop down menu to Survival Expo, complete the registration form, and join us October 17th for Survival Expo 15. Learn how you can make sure you and your family are prepared to meet future emergencies. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.